Nearly every episode of Snapped ends with a conviction, but sometimes that isn't the end of the story. I'm Sharon Martin, producer and narrator of Snapped. We filmed the Kimberly Long episode in 2015, and since then, there have been big developments in the case.
I've had the pleasure of having 25 clients having their convictions reversed and walking them out of prison. And, you know, I've stood next to it many times, but I still have no idea what it feels like.
That's Justin Brooks, director and co-founder of the California Innocence Project. In June of 2016, the trial judge reversed Kim's murder conviction on appeal.
It's unthinkable. It's unthinkable that to spend years and years in prison for something you didn't do and then have one moment where it's reversed and where it's righted.
The reason for the reversal? The judge found that she had an inadequate defense. Since Justin and his team played a crucial role in this reversal, we called him to explain what had changed since the trial.
When we brought back in a lot of new evidence that hadn't been considered and things that hadn't been raised by defense counsel at trial, then the judge ruled that based on this new evidence that we presented, showing that there was evidence that had not been presented at trial, that the defense should have presented at trial, he was reversing the conviction based on ineffective assistance of counsel.
That means after more than 7 years in prison and nearly 13 years after Ozzie Condi's death, Kim Long is free for now. When Kim's case came to the attention of the California Innocence Project, Alyssa Birkel approached it as she does every case.
Being a lawyer in the Innocence Project, I go into every interview with a client really with a clean slate. I don't know if they're innocent. I don't know if they're guilty.
Here's what she did know. At around 2 a.m. on October 6, 2003, Kim Long called 911.
What's going on, man? I just came home. He's bloody. I don't know what's going on. He's still breathing. He's wrong.
Kim, a 27-year-old nurse, had just found her boyfriend, Oswaldo Condi, inside the house they shared, covered in blood. But in her panic, there was nothing Kim could do to help him.
When the officers arrived, they described Kim as very frantic, very hysterical. She smelled very strongly of booze still. And they take Kim down to the police station to interview her.
At this point, Kim was a witness. And by all appearances, investigators were interviewing a distraught woman who had just found her boyfriend of 6 months bludgeoned to death.
I came home at, I don't know what time. And I walked in the house and the lights were off.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see him.
You could see him?
Laying on the couch.
Okay.
And something was wrong. I could see something was wrong when I turned on the light. And I just, oh, I got into a fight and I went over to him. And I didn't even touch him. I knew I could see it. I could see it.
The crime scene was gruesome. Blood on the walls, the floor, all over Ozzie. But oddly, Kim wasn't covered in blood.
What were you wearing?
This.
This is what you have on right now? You didn't have any other jackets or anything like that on?
Yeah, this is the officer's jacket.
They find no blood on her, not a single drop. And there's no blood either on her arms, in her hair, on her face, no blood at all on Kim.
But Kim admitted that she and Ozzie had been drinking heavily all day and fighting, a red flag for any investigator.
Kim is saying things in her drunken state that are not very nice. Like, you don't pay your fair share of the bills. You know, I've been paying all of this money all this whole weekend to, you know, support you. Like, you need to get a job. And I want you out of the house.
And Kim told police that in her angry, drunken state, she stormed out of the house with a friend named Jeff Dills.
How long were you at Jeff's house?
About 2 hours.
About 2 hours? Mm-hmm. And then what? What were you guys doing at Jeff's house?
In the jacuzzi.
In the jacuzzi?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did anything happen in the jacuzzi?
No.
No? You guys were just sitting there talking or anything?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you and Jeff have anything going on?
No. No.
Kim also told the investigators that Jeff dropped her off around 2 a.m., just moments before she walked into the house and found Ozzie.
I went inside and I seen him on the couch and I was really happy that I helped him.
But that happiness was short-lived. Kim and Ozzy had only been dating seriously for about 6 months, but he had been one of her first crushes at the age of 12. Together, they were planning a future.
We had everything planned. Everything was awesome. We were going to have a bike away. Everything was perfect. He was my match. There's nobody else that can compare to him. Not one person. Not one person. Not one person. He was it.
Before investigators let her go home, they ask Kim to take a polygraph exam, and we have the tape of that. It's interesting for two reasons. One, it's not something we get to hear very often. After getting her settled, the examiner goes over the same set of questions multiple times.
Did you lie when you said that you do not know for sure just who it was that killed your boyfriend?
No.
Prior to the year 2000, have you ever lied to someone in authority in order to stay out of trouble?
No.
Did you lie to me when you said that you have not any knowledge of the person or persons who killed your boyfriend?
No.
Prior to the year 2000, did you ever lie to someone who really trusted you?
No.
Did you know prior to your boyfriend being killed who it was that was going to kill him?
No.
Over and over, the same set of questions. He's very kind, trying to calm her down, sympathizing with her loss. And this is the real reason this polygraph is important. At the end, he tells Kim, she passed.
Comes back out and says, no deception indicated. The probability of you being deceptive is less than 0.01%. That's pretty doggone conclusive.
Pretty doggone conclusive. His computer says Kim Long is telling the truth.
I'm going to go talk to the investigators. As far as I'm concerned, this lady's telling me the truth.
Okay.
But investigators would soon learn Kim wasn't telling the truth about everything. Remember her friend, Jeff Dills? When police talked to him, he remembered their evening very differently. Alyssa Biracle explains.
The two get into a hot tub, and, you know, hot tubs can definitely enhance the effects of alcohol as well. And Kim, in her drunken state, has a sexual encounter with Jeff.
Which was a huge red flag for the investigators.
Once you tell what you might think is a little white lie, like, oh, I didn't have a sexual encounter with Jeff, that lie all of a sudden turns into, you must be a killer because you lied.
Investigators didn't see it as a little white lie, especially once Jeff told them that he dropped Kim off around 1:30, more than half an hour before the 911 call. So 3 days after her first interview, investigators sat down with Kim again.
Do you see why we're looking at you, why we're questioning you like this? Wouldn't you want us to do this if it was your kid that was hurt or your family member?
From that point on, all other investigation into alternate suspects completely stopped. And the only focus was on Kim.
Kim was eventually arrested and charged with Ozzy's murder. She maintained her innocence, and at trial in February of 2005, the jury couldn't reach a verdict. The judge declared a mistrial. Her second trial began later that same year.
There was nothing really earth-shattering that changed between the first trial and the second trial.
The prosecutors painted her as an angry, cheating girlfriend who bludgeoned Ozzy Condi to death. As for Kim's defense, they argued that it wasn't Kim, that someone else killed Ozzy.
It didn't seem like there was as much effort put into the second trial to make sure that the jury this time came back 12 not guilty, not just 9.
And that showed when the jury returned with the verdict.
When she's convicted, I think it was a shock for everyone, and especially for Kim. In one of the transcripts, you can hear her, or you can read, and she yells out, you know, somebody please help me.
Even the trial judge was surprised by the verdict and made it clear that if he were deciding the case instead of the jury, he would not have convicted Kim, especially since the key piece of evidence against her was the statement of Jeff Dills, the man who said he dropped her off much earlier than Kim claimed, a a witness no one could cross-examine because he died in a motorcycle accident before the trial.
He really questioned himself about letting Jeff Dill's testimony in front of the jury. He really had second thoughts about that because, you know, without Jeff's testimony, this case would have never gone to trial.
When the California Innocence Project investigated Kim's case, it became clear that her defense missed a key point, that what time Kim arrived was not as important as what time Ozzie died. Justin Brooks explains.
Time of death is critically important in a case like this where someone has a clear alibi up to a certain point, and we know exactly when the 911 call was made. If proper time of death analysis had been done, it would have been clear that Ozzie was dead hours before that.
There was also the issue of the lack of blood on Kim's clothing.
The obvious argument by the prosecution was that her clothes had been changed. And what wasn't introduced into evidence was a statement given to the police specifically describing her clothing that she was wearing that day and when she went home that night. And they were the exact same pieces of clothing that she was wearing when she was arrested and taken into custody for the murder. So that was a big piece of evidence that hadn't been introduced at trial.
And if those two pieces of evidence weren't enough, the California Innocence Project found one more.
There was a cigarette butt on the crime scene that was never DNA tested. And when DNA testing was done on it, we established that it did not match Kimberly or the victim.
Which at trial could have been used to argue that someone else was at the crime scene, that someone else killed Ozzie, and that Kim, as she had said all along, was not guilty.
And this is what we do at the California Innocence Project, is we look at these cases and we look for things that weren't done. And if enough things weren't done that could have clearly established innocence, then a conviction can be reversed based on ineffective assistance of counsel to present evidence of innocence to the court that would have made a difference.
And in Kim's case, it was clear that evidence existed, but it's a long process to get a conviction overturned. And Kim would be waiting that out in prison. In March of 2009, she began serving her sentence for murder.
At trial, prosecution has to prove guilt. In post-conviction, we have to prove innocence. So it's much more difficult to later on put together a case that's so overwhelming that a judge says a conviction should be reversed.
But Kim had one advantage. The appeal filed by the California Innocence Project would be heard by the original trial judge.
We were in a good situation there, having a judge who really knew and understood the case and knew how thin the prosecution really was. And so when we brought back in a lot of new evidence that hadn't been considered and things that hadn't been raised by defense counsel at trial, then the judge ruled that based on this new evidence that we presented, showing that there was evidence that had not been presented at trial, that the defense should have presented at trial, he was reversing the conviction based on ineffective assistance of counsel.
Justin Brooks explains how extraordinary that moment, learning that the conviction has been overturned, that her time in prison is over, is for someone like Kim.
It's something you've fantasized about. It's something you've obsessed on. It's completely defined your life in a way nothing else could define your life. And I don't think any of us who haven't gone through it firsthand can understand it at all. Kim's just entering an entire new world and new phase of her life. It's you know, it's the Wizard of Oz when everything switches into color. It's impossible to imagine.
So let's stop for a moment. How does a woman get convicted of murder on so little evidence? In this case, Justin suspects that Kim's lifestyle, the motorcycles, the drinking, the fighting, and especially the night she spent with Jeff Dills, swayed the jurors.
They looked at Kim and they say, this all makes sense to me. This woman gets in a fight with her boyfriend. This woman goes off with this other guy. She comes home. Some type of jealous fight occurs. He ends up dead. It's just too much of a common story. And it's too easy for them to fit it into that package and condemn Kim for it. So, you know, she was found guilty of her actions of that day that had nothing to do with this murder. And then they just attached that murder to it.
So what happens to Kim now? She's out on bail, waiting for the prosecution to appeal the reversal.
They're going to try it out in the Court of Appeal and see if they can find some way legally to get this conviction or get the reversal reversed, which I don't believe they'll be successful at because it's a very tight decision written by the judge. But then I think they're going to sit down and look at it and say, dismissed. There's nothing we can do here. This case has been shredded. And that's been our history of our project. It's been threatened many, many times, and it's never happened when any of our clients have been re-prosecuted.
And so for those of us who aren't familiar with the appeals process, is that a matter of months or years, or is there any way to know?
There's no way to know. I suspect it will only be months, but you never know with these things, because it depends how far they're going to take it. They're going to take it to the Court of Appeal, and then they're going to try to take it to the California Supreme Court. They're going to try to find some other ways of doing this, but it shouldn't. I'm hoping this nightmare will be completely over for her by the end of the year, but we don't know.
So while there is still some uncertainty, Kim is moving forward, reconnecting with her family, trying to rebuild her life. And as Justin Brooks points out, her story is extraordinary, but not necessarily unique.
Kim is the face of many, many other people who are sitting in prison right now. And we need to do everything we can to fix the justice system to lessen the number of wrongful convictions. Anyone who wants to see all these stories, go to CaliforniaInnocenceProject.org. And they can see all the work we're doing. And of course, we would love any support because these cases are very expensive to pursue.
This podcast was produced by Sharon Martin, Deborah Allen, Ashley Overton, and the Snapped production team. Edited and mixed by Cody Alford and produced for Oxygen by Jupiter Entertainment.